Hi everybody, my name is Sue Supriano, and I'm going to be speaking with Frank Espada. Frank is a Puerto Rican human rights activist and documentary photographer. And I recently saw his documentary photographic show on the Puerto Rican diaspora, which was really, I was just very impressed, and I wanted to interview you as soon as possible to tell about this. You really captured the feeling of a lot of life. So tell me something about how that project came about, what you were trying to do, and tell our audience about it.
Sure. The project was funded, conceived and funded by the National Endowment for the Humanities in 1979. At that time, I had just finished working with a national Puerto Rican drug association that I had helped organize in 1973. Essentially, the project intended to document the Puerto Rican migratory experience in the United States. The diaspora began around the turn of the century after the Spanish-American War in 1898. The first group of Puerto Ricans that left the island, a significant group, went to Hawaii. The Hawaii Sugar Planters Association went to Puerto Rico to recruit workers for their sugar cane plantations. 5,000, over 5,000 signed up for that trip. They called them in those days expeditions. Many of them never returned to Puerto Rico.
We're talking here about Puerto Rico is a not very huge place to start out with, an island south of Florida in the Caribbean. And so when you say 5,000 from the population of Puerto Rico at that time, that must have been a lot of people.
It certainly was. Puerto Rico is in the Antilles. It is a possession of the United States as a result of the Spanish-American War. Senator Henry Jackson called it war booty, which it was. The conditions were abysmal around that time. There was a huge storm in 1898 that essentially destroyed many of the coffee and tobacco plantations. So there was a lot of unemployment, hunger, disease, et cetera, et cetera. It was really a very, very bad situation for many people there. As a result, when the recruiters came to sign people up, they applied in great numbers, and so 5,000 people was, as you say, was a lot of people in those days. So that was the beginning of the diaspora. It peaked around the mid-50s. After the war, there were enormous numbers of people that that left Puerto Rico. Primarily looking for a better life, looking for work. If you recall, the post-war years were boom years for the economy here. There was a lot of work, particularly in the service industry and factories and low-paying jobs, low-skilled jobs. So that by the mid-50s, close to a third of the population had migrated from Puerto Rico. If you can translate that into United States American, if you were to take a third of the population of this country that were to migrate, you can get an idea about what a massive movement of people that was. In 1917, backing up a little bit, in 1917, Puerto Ricans received the blessing of this American citizenship through the Smith Act. Puerto Rico was caught in a bind regarding status from the beginning. it so happened that as a result of the Spanish-American War, Spain ceded not only Puerto Rico, but the Philippines, and certainly Cuba at one point. So as a result, Puerto Rico was placed in a very difficult position because of the fact that the Philippines were involved in the deal. And it all boils down to racism, just plain racism. The feeling in the Senate and the Congress was that the Philippines could never be allowed to become a part of the United States. by that I mean becoming a state. So whereas before, territories that were acquired they were given status as territories in preparation for joining the Union, as happened with Alaska and Hawaii and the Western territories and so on. In this instance, Puerto Rico was placed in a very special category, which is limbo, because of the fact that the Philippines were also part of that package.
And both of these countries have lots of people of color. Is that what you're talking about, racism?
Yeah, well, not only color, but strangely enough, there was expressed acceptance of the Puerto Rican elite, the ruling elite, the economic elite, by the political leadership in the United States. They considered, which they were, European. Whereas the Philippines, of course, they call them by all kinds of racist names and little monkeys, etc. It's that kind of thing that took place. So that the Philippines were looked upon as a very foreign, very exotic, very strange, and you know, a group of people. Whereas the Puerto Rican situation was a bit different because they were associated with Spain and Spain being part of Europe and so on. So, but it all boiled down to racism, essentially. In a series of Supreme Court decisions around the turn of the century called the Insula Cases, essentially set the present status of Puerto Rico as essentially neither here nor there, neither fish nor fowl. And that has created a condition right now where the status issue is in Puerto Rico essentially overrides just about everything else. There are three factions, one pro-independence, another is pro-statehood, and the third is the Commonwealth, which is what is the compromise, so-called, that was created in the 50s, and essentially the work of the first elected Puerto Rican governor, Luis Muñoz Marín, of the Popular Party, Partido Popular Democrático. In any case, my own personal experience, I think, can be said to be prototypical of our experience in this country, if I may. I was born in Puerto Rico in 1930. When I first went to school in 1935, I started school in Puerto Rico. And I was told that I couldn't speak Spanish any longer in school. This was the result of the effort to Americanize Puerto Ricans by teaching English in school, exclusively English. They would teach Spanish as a language, and all the other subjects were taught in English, which created the ridiculous situation of Puerto Rican teachers with limited ability in English, trying to teach a subject in English to kids who didn't understand the language.
Mm-hmm. It would clearly end up in a less good education than it could be, huh?
It was a circus, to say the least. In any case, I mentioned that as one of many indignities, if I may put it that way, that we have suffered through the occupation, essentially, of Puerto Rico by the United States. I am a pro-independence. I always have been, as far as I can remember. I seriously doubt whether we'll see independence in my lifetime, short of revolution, and I don't think that's going to happen, although some of my more left-leaning friends castigate me for taking that position. I see Puerto Rico as a very valuable asset to the United States. It is one of this country's most active trading partners. In other words, the Puerto Rico imports 90% of its foodstuffs, and just about everything else is imported. But the only thing that's produced there are pharmaceuticals and some electronics and so on, and which is all exported. I mean, it's American companies.
Yeah, it's probably produced there because of cheap labor, I'm assuming.
It's part of the Operation Bootstrap that happened as a result of in the 50s, which gave American corporations not only cheaper labor, but also tax relief. They didn't have to pay taxes for 10 years, etc. That was a disaster, total disaster, that program. Later on in that program, they decided to concentrate on heavy industry. They brought in petrochemicals, which essentially polluted the atmosphere and left. It was a total disaster as far as that goes. The unemployment in Puerto Rico is extremely high. It's become a dependent society.
You know, I hear Puerto Rico often mentioned as kind of the... In fact, they talk about the Puerto Rican model for a lot of other third world countries. So I just wanted to point that out to people, that it's considered by some to be a real success. So I guess what you call a success depends on your vantage point.
Well, if you call a success the fact that 70% of the people need to be on food stamps in order to survive, if you call it success the fact that over half of the people are unemployed, if you call it a success a number of other sad, very sad statistics related to economics, what we have here is a country very much under the influence of the United States. We are American citizens. Puerto Ricans have fought in this country's war since the First World War. As a matter of fact, Puerto Rican men and women have died disproportionately. And that is, we have we've had more deaths, more casualties than people from any other state in the Union. We have paid our dues. Many of us, whether we like it or not, consider ourselves American. We are American citizens. We belong to this union, whether we like it or not. We're talking here essentially about that kind of situation. We are not a third world country. Many of us wish we were independent and to be able to work our own destinies. But we are not that. We are completely under the control of the United States. The control that's so pervasive for example, something like $5 billion worth of federal monies come into Puerto Rico. Along with that come over 900 regulations dealing with how that money is to be spent and used. This is bureaucratic control, aside from everything else. But aside from that, from all of that, we have a situation where over a third of the living Puerto Ricans are here in the United States. And that was my primary concern when I started my activities back in the 50s, in the late 50s and 60s, and early 60s. I've been involved with the issues affecting our community, not only our community, but all minority, oppressed peoples in this country, since I was a very young man. Naturally, I focused and concentrated more on Puerto Rican issues because of the fact that I'm Puerto Rican. I was raised in New York. I was a witness to the injustice, essentially the racism that we have suffered for all these years. We're still suffering. This is what prompted me not only to pursue these issues throughout my life, but also to, I've been a photographer, if I back up a little bit, since I was also a young man. And I've been photographing my involvement in my community and other communities through the years, which led me to the very logical point in 1979 that I felt I wanted to formalize what I was doing. The Diaspora Project was funded by the National Endowment, as I mentioned before, in 1979 through 1982. And that essentially gave me the opportunity to travel to over 40 communities throughout the country in which I found a tremendous number of issues that essentially lay dormant, that no one is paying any attention to. For example, the issue of the sterilization of Puerto Rican women in Hartford General Hospital, to be specific, in Hartford, in Connecticut, where over half of the Puerto Rican women who go to that hospital with any kind of reproductive problem are sterilized. And many of them are not quite sure what happened. They are not counseled properly. They essentially feel that, some of them feel that it's a reversible process, and so on. That's one of the many issues that I wanted to do since this project ended. Actually, the project has not ended. The grant ended in 1982. The project has continued, and we have been exhibiting throughout the country since that time. We have shown in 27 different places, locations. We now have a book that is in process and should be coming out in the fall, mm-hmm. Published by Temple University Press. One of the many issues that that I felt needed to be explored. Another was the issue of arson in the Puerto Rican community. Arson, which is used for profit, arson for profit, and also for displacement, which is connected to profit. In a place called Holyoke in Massachusetts, in two summers in the 70s, late 70s, a substantial Puerto Rican community was displaced by arson. And my understanding now is that it is that the area where this happened is has now been cleared and is now in process of being built or has been rebuilt into a shopping area and so on. This happens quite a bit in our community. Arson is endemic. There are many, many other issues of that nature. We have a tremendously high unemployment rate. We have the highest indices of social pathology, including adolescent suicide, mental illness, many, many other ills that beset our community nationally here in the United States.
It seems to me that I remember one of the sort of the main thing that I got from your photographic exhibit is that we, as Puerto Ricans, have been made an underclass in the United States. Mm-hmm. Which, of course, is not. There's no particular reason to have to be.
Yes, and I like to define that. What I mean by underclass, it is a condition that I describe as such. When a group of people is essentially pushed out of the mainstream, and I don't even like to use that term, but the mainstream of the economy, when they essentially have to survive by other means, including subsistence, welfare, illegal means, whatever, then you're dealing with an underclass. You're dealing with a class that is going to fall into a vicious cycle, that will not be able to get out of it.
And from there come all these, we were talking about earlier, like jokes and the kind of the racist, the stereotypes about Puerto Ricans. And this goes for other groups too, but we're talking about Puerto Ricans right here, right now.
Well, the difference when we talk about various groups, and there's a key difference here. When we hear an ethnic joke, and I despise ethnic jokes generally, but when you hear an ethnic joke about a group that is already established in the United States, it can be really taken lightly, to some extent. When you're talking about a group that is down and out, when you're talking about Puerto Ricans who essentially have a living migration, because we have new Puerto Rican migrants coming in every week, every month, you're really talking about a kicking person when he or she is down. So that's one of the reasons why one of the things that we're going to be doing is the creation of a Puerto Rican Anti-Defamation League, similar to other such groups in the United States, the most famous one being the B'nai B'rith Anti-Defamation League. We are, as Gordon Lewis, who is a very highly regarded historian of the Puerto Rican condition, terms the Puerto Rican community as a despised people, and I believe that. And we are a despised people. One of our missions with this project is to formalize the organization into a national group, and to begin to explode the myths, to begin to make people accountable to someone when they deal with our community. We have had enough abuse. That's what we're saying. In addition to that, we are going to be pursuing the idea of doing investigative journalism, documentation of issues such as the ones I've mentioned before. We are going to also to be creating a center to collect and disseminate information regarding the Puerto Rican migratory experience. So all of these things are in the making. Nothing is going to be easy to do because we don't get funded. That's the other thing that happens to our ideas, our people, our talent. We're ignored. We're not very popular. We don't bring the kind of credentials to a foundation that they generally look for. Regarding either education or safety by staying within the mainstream, we essentially are outcasts in the society. So, given all that, I'm happy to report that for those of you out there who may be interested in this, that it's been my experience anyway that we have, as a result, developed a strain of Puerto Ricans in this country that are pretty tough. We are resourceful. We make do with very little because we have to. We are sophisticated. We know what the system is about, what the society is about. We're not going to kid ourselves or anyone else. What I say is that I see nothing but great things happening in the future. And I think that we have the kind of community, we are the type of people, if I may put it this way, that are all-encompassing, that we have learned to encompass others. We are, I think, the least clannish of all the ethnic groups in this country. We encompass all kinds of people. We are, one-third of our people have non-Hispanic surnames. That's the other thing that I like to point out. We are a very cosmopolitan and very diverse group of people. We are all nations. We are a nation of people. We're not just an ethnic group. So for all those reasons, I'm very optimistic, and I feel that our young people are coming on very, very strong, although the educational opportunities are still not there. So I like to point that out as it's not all negative. Although most of our people are in poverty, we are still the butt of vicious jokes and slander. We suffer from from discrimination and rampant racism, particularly in Northeast in New York, by the way. I think
that's where the largest concentration of Puerto Ricans are in this country, is it not?
It used to be that New York had the most Puerto Ricans. It's no longer true, although it's still the largest Puerto Rican community in the country. We now have over 60 different communities with populations of 10,000 Puerto Ricans or more throughout the country. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Frank Espada. Did you want to say, do you know the name of your book? You say your book is coming out in the fall. Yeah. We want to alert people to look for it.
Yeah. It's called The Puerto Rican Diaspora, Themes in the Struggle in the Survival of a People. And it's to be published by Temple University Press in Pennsylvania and Philadelphia.
Okay, well, I really encourage people to look for that. The photographs are wonderful, and you'll really be very inspired. I'm Sue Supriano, and thanks very much for listening. Touring.